sometimes we get it wrong, you know, but it's being able to be human in the room and say, you know, this is what I'm sensing. Have I got it right? I'd always use curiosity and wonderings. It's about, gosh, I'm aware I've just picked something up. I want to check in with you. Have I got that right? And sometimes people aren't even aware and they'll say no. And then maybe further down the line, they'll go, oh my God, yeah, that did happen. So it's, I think as long as we use humility and we're curious, then we're not stepping in with this is what it is.
Welcome to Good Enough Counsellors, the podcast for growing a private practice without needing to be perfect. I'm Josephine Hughes, counsellor and creator of Therapy Growth Group, helping you get the clients you want. And in today's episode, I'm delighted to welcome Becky Willoughby of Willow Therapy Tring to the studio. Welcome, Becky.
Hello, thank you.
It's really lovely to have you here. So, Becky, I'm just going to dive straight in, because what people really love is they love hearing from practitioners. So yes. People who are in private practice, what they do and how they've done it. So how long have you been in private practice?
Oh, well, my private practice as a counsellor has been about 12 years.
Wow.
But
yeah.
Prior to that, I was in private practice as a clinical aromatherapist for 10 years. Mm-hmm. So it's been just over 20 years with private practice. Obviously, they're both very different practices.
So are you still doing the aromatherapy?
No, I kind of phased it out. I have to say, I do still practice it with my children, who are all adults. They'll quite often come with sort of dodgy knees or different things that are wrong with them, and I'll still work with them. But generally, as a rule, I don't practice, although I do miss it terribly.
Tell me about what you miss about it.
Do you know, I think I miss the hands-on element, because
right.
Counselling is very much in our head, mm-hmm. although I do quite a lot of creative work with children. But I really miss the grounding of the massage. But it just, I think the more I focused on the counselling, the less time I had to put into the massage. So I sort of slowly stepped away. But it's not to say it won't ever come back again.
Yeah. And did it lead you... Did doing the aromatherapy, the massage, lead you into therapy? Is that what
Definitely.
Made you? Yeah.
Absolutely. So I trained when my youngest son was just over one.
Oh,
I went back to college and did a 3-year diploma in London with Tisserand.
Mm-hmm.
And I predominantly started out with sports massage.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I went into doing some volunteer work in hospices.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a big turning point for me, because I was running my own private practice alongside working with cancer patients, and I did a lot of training around working holistically with cancer patients.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of that, I found that a lot of people just wanted to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of veered off a side path where I ended up working with the families.
Mm-hmm.
And so the families quite often wanted to sit there while I was doing a treatment for the patient. And then through that, they'd start talking. And I think the more training I did in cancer care holistically, the more I recognized the talking and the listening side, more importantly,
mm-hmm.
was something I was really enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
So that took me down the pathway of, first of all, I did my Reiki training over 3 years, and I incorporated that into the cancer work. And then I started my counseling journey.
So you've really got a few different types of therapy there.
Oh, listen, I think probably 25 years now, 24 years, because my son is 24, my youngest. And I think his entire life I have been training. So I did obviously the clinical aromatherapy, then I did the intensive Indian head massage, goodness me, non-surgical facial massage, and then the Reiki, and then the cancer treatments. And then even when I started on the counselling journey, I did the counselling diploma, which led on to doing Adlerian family therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I went on and did Tavistock. I went over to Tavistock in London and did a lot of training around couples in conflict and working with children with trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did my supervision diploma during COVID,
mm-hmm.
and continue still. So I enjoy the training, and it's just like building blocks, really.
Yeah.
But I would say all of that comes into the therapy room,
mm-hmm.
because it's a very holistic setting,
mm-hmm.
and I bring some of that felt sense of the body into the counselling sessions.
Yeah. So obviously there's a lot of somatic work that you were doing with sort of say the cancer patients and stuff.
Yeah.
How have you incorporated maybe a somatic way of being and way of working with people?
The somatic bit is very much, I mean, I've had phenomenal supervisors, I would say, over the 12-year period. I've had some absolutely brilliant supervisors who have been very much about the felt sense and encouraged me to work energetically. So very much now, I suppose we develop our confidence, don't we? And I'm much more pokey, much more challenging. So if I detect a change in the energy around a person, whether it's seen or felt, I'll name it. So it might be that there's body language going on. It might be if there's a couple in the room, the body language between them, or there's a shift in the energy. And so I think the Reiki training I'd had all those years ago definitely helps with the energetic way of working, and it's just naming it. And it's literally, I think I liken it to the difference between having a cold knife and putting it into a piece of butter, or a boiling hot knife and it just slices straight through. You get straight to the center when you're naming and labeling.
And do you find that introduces any sort of conflict or anything like that? I mean, you know, I'm a great one for occasionally putting my foot in it. So how do you manage that side of things?
Oh, yes. My goodness me. We're all human, aren't we? So, I mean, sometimes we get it wrong, you know, but it's being able to be human in the room and say, you know, this is what I'm sensing. Have I got it right? I'd always use curiosity and wonderings. It's about, gosh, I'm aware I've just picked something up. I want to check in with you. Have I got that right? And sometimes people aren't even aware. And they'll say no. And then maybe further down the line, they'll go, oh, my God, yeah, that did happen. So it's, I think, as long as we use humility and we're curious, then we're not stepping in with this is what it is. So I think there's more room for being human when we do that.
So I think that's something that really does come across, and part of the reason why I wanted to invite you on as well, because I love following your Facebook page, because you're very, very real on your Facebook page, aren't you?
Oh, gosh, I know. And I will say that that's been a tricky one for me.
Yeah, go on.
You know, that was a tricky one, because I think, first of all, we know I'm not techie by coming on today.
We have this with most of our guests. We all struggle to get on.
I know. So I'm not techie at all. And also, I think it's worth saying that, you know, my childhood, there were elements of that where things were squished. That doesn't mean it was a negative experience. There were parts of it which were unhelpful.
Yeah.
And it's meant that taking a photograph of myself, oh, that really? Was hard, really hard. And I remember a couple of years ago having quite a knockback. I'm very, very lucky. The people that follow, and God knows how, but there's over 1,000 people following it. And I'm like, really? Why?
Yes, because it's a great page.
But I think there's something about everybody is very kind, and it's a very gentle community of people who are needing the support and checking in and saying that's really helpful. But I did have an experience where it came to my attention that somebody had said, gosh, she really likes the posting pictures of herself.
Oh, goodness.
And I had to suddenly go, oh my gosh, what does that mean? And it took me straight into childhood of that kind of, who do you think you are?
And
the critical voice came straight back and sat plonked on my shoulder. And I think I didn't post for a while, because I thought, oh my gosh, I just need to post pictures of the room, or, you know, pieces of equipment that I might use. And and the kind of the interaction went down.
It does.
And I thought, actually, what people want is they want the humanness. They want to see you if you're having a great day, having a bad day, wearing a silly hat, or, you know, because that's how people connect. They connect human to human.
Absolutely.
And I think as long as it relates to something that has come up for me during that week, or a theme that's going through the therapy room, I think it's really relevant. You know, it's what connects us. You know, if I was going on and saying, gosh, you know, I'm off on holiday, lucky me, I'm having a great time, full stop. But if it then goes on and says, you know, this is about self-care and the need for self-compassion, and how do you give that to yourself? I think that's where you get the link in and the connection.
But absolutely.
I do still occasionally look at it and go, oh, that's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But again, it's like, you know what? I'm going to face my fear. I'm going to step out there, and I've grown because of it.
Mm.
So, you know, it's been a journey.
It is lovely to see you. And I think I was looking at it just again, just before I came online. And there's a lovely one that you did recently where you went through the charity shops and you found some feathers to put in your hair.
I loved it.
Yeah.
It's great.
And I think what was nice about it was, it was very personal, but also it was connected to a theme. And we saw a little picture into your life.
Yeah.
But it made you, as you say, very human as well. And I think it's difficult sometimes to know what photos to show of yourself, isn't it? It's difficult to do.
Yeah. I had a supervisor. Well, she's still my supervisor. She's phenomenal. She's been on my journey for a number of years. Mm. And I remember going to her and saying, I'm not sure if I'm posting the right things, because I'm really conscious that old style counselling was very much you don't give anything away.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we're now stepping into a world of social media
where
it's a little bit like, you know, everything's up for grabs.
Mm.
And I said, I'm wondering if I should shut the page down and be more professional and not share anything of myself. And she used a really beautiful word that has really sat with me. And she said to me, Becky, when you put your Facebook page up, people can choose whether they follow or not.
Mm.
And she said, there's an element of infantilizing if you treat them like children. You know, oh, you mustn't see this or you mustn't look at that. She said, these are adults who, you know, if they choose to follow, it's their choice.
Mm-hmm.
And that settled something within me, because I, in that kind of moment of, is this the right thing to do? I thought, yeah, I'm actually forgetting that these people have choices.
Yeah.
They can choose to switch it off. Or if they want the sessions that they have with me to be more boundary, they can choose to step away.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for me that it really cemented, it's okay to do this.
Yeah.
As long as, and I quite often talk about being a grandparent. And obviously I talk about parenthood. That's a big part of the work that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And my four children are now adults.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask their permission, is it okay to put something up?
Yeah.
Is it okay to have a picture? And if they say no, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's like, great, no problem. Yeah. And my grandson, you know, I will run a picture through my daughter. Is this okay? And there have been times where she said, oh, I'm not sure. And I think particularly with AI stepping in, where they can replicate pictures, I think I'm more conscious of current photos of my children or grandchildren being put out there. So I might put something that talks about children, but it might be a picture of one of my children when they were 2 months old. So there's the non-identifiable in there.
So you're sort of protecting them as well, and protecting their privacy too.
That's really definitely helpful.
And do you find that you're getting people who are saying to you, you know, this particular post spoke to me, and it's what helps people to choose to work with you?
I think, first of all, I would say, I know there's a huge thing in the counselling world about where does the flow of clients come from.
Yeah.
And we're obviously, I'm listed with Counselling Directory, but I would say the majority of the client work will come through the website.
Right.
So I think it's always worth having a solid website with an access.
Mm-hmm.
So something where people can contact you via the website.
Yeah.
Because it is, I would definitely, the majority of our work will come through the website if it's going to be an online portal. The rest of it is through GPs and schools.
Yeah.
So I would say that the purpose of the posts is never to generate inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing I'd say. I don't ever do the Facebook posts as in, I want to gain clients through this mode.
Yeah.
It's purely for, the purpose of it is connection.
Right.
It's kind of to put a message out there about communication, connection and support.
Yeah.
I have people who will message me independently and say, you know, you wrote about this and it really resonated and this is my story and thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can reply to them. But it's I would say we do get clients through the Facebook page, but predominantly it's just about connection and supporting the average person who's maybe having a really rubbish day.
Yeah.
And they click on and they read something about parenting and they're like, oh my God, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
And I think that's the purpose, really.
Mm. Oh, I love that. So it's really interesting, isn't it? Because it's you're actually giving through your page, aren't you? Rather than trying to get through your page. That's
definitely
what's coming up for me. It's about connection. It's about offering something to people.
Yeah. And having that. I think that. It's not an advertising tool, I think, is what I'd say.
Yeah.
I think it's worth recognising that, for example, my son has a business and he uses Facebook as an advertising tool.
Yeah.
Because it's selling a component.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, one, I'm not a salesperson. And I think for me, I'd be really uncomfortable promoting my services to sell them
mm-hmm.
through social media. It mm-hmm. really is, for me, it's just about connection.
Mm.
Whereas the website is very much geared up as in, this is a product. If mm-hmm. you want to look at the cost of it or what's involved or the length of time, there's information on there. Mm-hmm. And then you can click on this link and contact us.
Yeah.
So that's more of that mm-hmm. advertising tool, certainly mm-hmm. the website.
And do you know how people find the website? Because this is another thing, isn't it? People say, oh, I've got a website and they'll
yeah.
find it.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I can't take any credit for this because I really can't. It is a bit of a family business. So my daughter will take my Facebook posts.
Yeah.
And she will put them onto Instagram. I have nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
Because purely because, one, I don't always have the time. And also, you know, if I'm being really honest, I love my kids and I want to do things to help them sometimes, but without de-skilling. And my daughter's great with social media. If it gives her something extra monthly, then that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So she will quite often, I'll say, can you hashtaggy that thingy? And then she's like, oh God, Mum, it's really sad that you don't know. And she said, why do you write so much? It's really hard to condense it. And I'm like, well, what am I meant to do? She goes, you're meant to just write little pieces. And I said, oh, you'll just have to deal with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, she'll do that side of it. And then her partner, my son-in-law, he does the website. So
Brilliant.
He'll do the website. He's my lead admin.
Yeah.
So he will, things like if we've got letters, reports, he does that. He does all the graphic design. He designed the website. And so he will go in and, now this means nothing to me, but a CEO or CEO,
yeah.
SEO,
yeah.
there
yeah.
we go. And he will go in on a regular basis and say, right, I've bumped it up the list, or I've moved this or jiggled this or put this word in and it'll push it up the list. And I'm
yeah.
like, wow,
thank you.
Can you do that? So, and people will say, oh, I found you on the website
mm-hmm.
Through Google search.
Yeah.
So, and I think even, I've even had people who go to Counselling Directory
mm-hmm.
and rather than contacting us through Counselling Directory, they click on the website link
yeah.
there.
Uh-huh.
So that if people are looking at where can I get my referrals from, I'd say really put some effort, time and finance into a website
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because it definitely pays back.
Yeah.
And it's, I'd say as well, it's a little bit like, you know, on a thermostat, if you turn it ever so slightly, the temperature changes dramatically.
Yeah.
So going into your website and just changing a word
mm-hmm.
can push it up the list, or even
yeah.
changing a photograph.
Yeah.
And so what Owen does is he will go in and just change slight bits.
Mm.
And I might say to him, oh, can you update this? Or maybe that sentence doesn't sound right. And he'll say, mm. right, I'll add it onto the list of things to do.
Yeah.
And that makes a difference.
Yeah. Fantastic. And it's so helpful, isn't it, to have talented people in your family that you can.
It's, do you know, it's brilliant, but I don't know that he would, maybe he wouldn't voice that. I can be quite steering away from the word control freak, but quite particular
yeah.
about how things look. And so I could quite often be messaging or ringing him and he's like, yeah, no, I've done a report recently. He was very, very patient with me in formatting it and getting the right font. And so he's very patient.
Yeah, it's interesting actually, Becky, because when you look at your page and your website, I think you really do have an eye for that sort of design, don't you? I think they it does stand out that you, it's all very together and.
Well, maybe I think it's because it looks together, but that can explain why I'm not always together inside. Let me tell you, my brain is, I mean, my supervisors are really qualified in working with neurodiversity. And she says, you do know you have an ADHD brain. Yeah. And I said, oh boy, I know. Because literally I've got hundreds of little projects going on and they're all in my head, but not always out in front of me. Mm-hmm. And so that organisation in my surroundings is quite important.
Yeah. So it's part of the way you help yourself feel calm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. It is actually a really calming aura. There is a really calming aura about it, isn't there? So
well, there is. And I think there's something also about the fact that for me, the website and the room had to convey a part of who I was and the journey I'd been on, but also something that we all do this maybe for the bits that were missing for us. And I certainly know that in years past when my children were younger and they'd accessed counselling support, particularly with CAMHS, you know, it was quite a sterile clinical environment. Mm-hmm. And I was really keen to have an environment that particularly kids and young adults could walk in and go, oh, you know, kick off their shoes, climb on the sofa and unfold.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they do. And adults will say the same thing. They'll go, oh, this isn't what I expected. And then they settle into the sofa and they start talking. And particularly it's set up a lot for children. But it's amazing how many adults will go, I remember having that when I was little. And then the memory comes up.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's powerful stuff, the surroundings that we use.
If you've been listening to Becky talk about showing up with care and connection on social media and how her therapy space and website reflect not just her work, but the journey she's been on, you'll know this is about more than marketing. It's about your identity. That's exactly what we're exploring inside Therapy Growth Group this month. How to tune into your values, own your story, and show up online in a way that feels true to you. If you want support on getting clearer on what makes you different and how to share that with potential clients, come along and join us. It's not about performing, it's about being seen. And you can find the link to Therapy Growth Group in the show notes. Now, back to Becky. So tell us a bit more about your room. Tell us what you've got in there and how you've organised it.
I think it's, my God, what haven't I got in there, really? I read something a while ago that was all about how the therapy room should be a blank canvas. And I thought, my God, it's like I've literally just poured a bucket of paint over mine and then splattered it everywhere. It's definitely not a blank canvas. But, you know, I think I'm incredibly conscious that there was this parallel process going on. Because there are so many layers and levels to the room, because I set up the room, particularly the one on the high street now, I set that room up as my children were slowly kind of moving away from home. So at home, the childhood things were going off to charity shops or being boxed up. And the room was developing with all of the childhood stuff. And alongside that, I was doing a lot of inner work child on myself. And I was able to recreate the space that maybe I hadn't had. And so it all converged into Willow. And I think Willow just, it sort of morphed and became this child that I was nurturing.
Wow.
And I mean, I get so much joy if I'm out with my grandson and we go into a toy shop. I'll think nothing to being, oh my gosh, I love this. And I'm nurturing my own inner child, but at the same time, I'm going, oh, I can buy this for the room. I'm not buying it for me. And then it goes into the room. And gosh, how many adults get joy from that? I've had adults sit and hold a fluffy bear or a fluffy octopus and say, oh my gosh, it's so soft and I love this. And or particularly if somebody is really upset and there's a lot of emotion coming to the surface, being able to say, would you like me to give you something to hold? And there's a choice here. And they will sit and cuddle that bear. And of course, that's meeting their need at the same time as well. And particularly if there's a lot of reparenting going on. So the room is, I think it's, to some it could be a sensory overload. To me, it's a sensory space. So the chairs are particular fabrics. The cushions are velvet so that you can see it. do you know, it's everything that self-soothes when I sit with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had somebody in a while ago, and it might be somebody navigating grief. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a pile of really soft, fluffy blankets. Would you like a blanket? Mm. Oh, yes, please. Mm. And they can wrap it around themselves. Mm. And they're hugging themselves. So we're kind of empowering them. You've got this within you.
Yeah.
And so that's all at our fingertips. Mm. And I think it's probably worth noting that I try really hard to always involve local businesses, local suppliers. And so if, for example, there's a company called The Five, and they've made the most phenomenal story cards.
Oh.
And so we use, you know, and I've meet the maker, you know, I've met the lady who made them and crafted them and the designers. And so when these things are in the room, it's not mass produced.
Yeah.
You know, I can say I met the person who made that, or somebody who crochets little families of hedgehogs that we use.
Yeah.
You know, there's something very family-like about the room because it's got that gentle, nurturing, organic feel to it.
Yeah. That sense of connection again, isn't it? There's a sense
it
of
is.
You connecting with the community.
It is.
Yeah. And also that sense of, you know, when you were saying about them wrapping themselves in the blankets, and we were talking earlier about somatic work, there's something around that, isn't there?
Yeah.
Connecting
definitely
again. Yeah,
and I think it's all about the empowering. And I think, you know, don't get me wrong, there are going to be times where somebody really is in an emotional space, where there are times where saying, you know, would you like a hug? You know, that sometimes if we come to the end of the session, I wouldn't say I don't hug my clients, because I think if you can pick up on that energy, and it's something that's going to support them, particularly if they're going home and there is no one there to offer that.
Yeah.
But I think there's something incredibly powerful about empowering another person, particularly children. You know, with children, it'll be, I can see that you're really struggling here. Is there something in the room that you'd like to hold? And they will hug it and go away with, when I feel sad or dysregulated, I have the power within myself to reach for something to create regulation again. So, you know, having that at our fingertips in the room is so important to me.
And talking of regulation, what do you do to look after yourself?
Well, you've chosen the right day. I'm actually about to go off on a yoga and a pottery retreat this afternoon.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, I think I would say to you that I'm only human. Every now and then it slips. And then I'm like, oh, okay, what do I need? And I've got much better at that over the years. The biggest thing is I made the choice to move to the Cotswolds, which was a big, big change. Three of my adult children live in Tring still.
Yeah.
And my daughter had moved out to the Cotswolds and with her partner and their baby. And I kind of did a bit of a leap of faith and thought, okay, I can try this and see how I feel with it. And it's a much slower pace of living. It's, for me, it feeds that desire of, you know, my two safe spaces are France and Devon. So you've got the sea, and then with France, it's just all the scenery and the slow pace of living.
Yeah.
And that is met here.
Wow.
And so once a week, I'll drive to Tring on a Wednesday morning, and I'll see clients face to face Wednesday and Thursday, and then stay with my son and drive home.
Yeah.
And my team, I have a team who work for me, use the room the rest of the week.
Yeah.
But my slow living is, I think, probably the biggest answer, because I think when we're in this line of work, the potential for burnout is huge. And I've traveled that path. And I think the learning is in slowing down. So it's not necessarily one thing. It might be yoga, it might be pottery, it might be drawing, it might be music. But the biggest thing is in treating each day in a slower way has been a big learning curve for me.
Yeah, quite difficult to do sometimes, isn't it?
It is difficult to do, but I think my children moving away and having their own families and settling has just created this huge space. And, you know, having the courage to sit with the space and slow down, because my life was very, very fast from a very young age. I had my first child when I was 20.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, 30 years later, it was a speedy process of parenting and lunchboxes and clubs and, you know, all the things that come with raising children. It's fast.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it's really speedy and fast.
Yeah.
And so I think the slowness that's come now, whilst I'm living a slower pace of life, I think sometimes my body is still trying to catch up.
Mm.
So there are still elements that are that fingerprint that's left on the body, and I'm learning to listen to my body a lot more.
Yeah. So do you still see clients in the Cotswolds, or are you just working?
No, I work on Zoom.
Oh,
so
right.
My work has kind of veered off in a slightly different direction. Originally, I worked with children and I really enjoyed that work. And then I moved into sort of more family orientated work.
Mm.
And I'm really, really privileged in that, one, I love what I do. And I think I kind of have a mix of clients that keeps that variety going. But I do a lot of court process work, which there are not many people that do it.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why.
Can you tell us a bit more about what that involves?
Yeah, so I step in from the family point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, first of all, it's worth noting that I have two supervisors. I have one who does my everyday counselling work.
Yeah.
And I also have a trained private mediator. And she is my supervisor for my court work.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say court work, I will only ever take on two, maximum three cases at any one time,
mm-hmm.
because it's filling.
Yeah.
It fills your head. It's not for the faint-hearted.
Mm-hmm.
So what it is I've done a lot of training with Tavistock around mentalization, dementalization, and conflict.
Yeah.
And so I will have a couple who... usually there's children involved, because the court case is the child proceedings.
Yeah.
And they may go to court and a judge may order that they need to work with a family therapist,
mm-hmm.
as an interim, mm-hmm. whilst maybe CAFCAS or social services are involved.
Yeah.
So a judge will assign me mm-hmm. the family cases. So there are two solicitors that I work with, two solicitors firms that I've worked with for a number of years now.
Mm-hmm.
And they will recommend me in the court process, or they will assign the family to me. And my work is that I will see the parents individually on Zoom,
mm-hmm.
and over a stepped process, I've kind of developed a stepped process that we work towards them being on Zoom together.
Mm-hmm.
And that is about communication styles, how they communicate, facilitating. So it's facilitating conversations. And we may just have one topic of conversation that we may spend those 60 minutes learning how to communicate. But we generally come out, I mean, usually a 3-month period, and I can have parents that will communicate online. And of mm-hmm. course, that's keeping the child at the centre.
Yeah.
And at the same time as doing that piece of work, I will see the child or the children in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got specific spaces on a Wednesday where the child will come into the room. And the confidentiality is to the child, unless, and this is the piece that we work on, I'm going to advocate for them.
Yeah.
And it's been hugely, is reparative a word? Restorative mm-hmm. is, but it's repairing.
Mm-hmm.
It's massively, it works, is all I can say.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a model that allows parents to learn to communicate. So I may see them individually initially, so they can talk about their story, their journey through the divorce. And then I see them together. Then I feed back what the child's thoughts and feelings are. And usually over a 6-month period, and court proceedings may be going along at the same time, we get to a space where, you know, a lot of the time these parents say, we're happy to meet together at a coffee shop and keep little Johnny at the centre and have conversations about who's going to have the school uniform and who's going to take the PE kit in and who's going to pay for this trip. And
it really helps with the conflict side of things,
doesn't
it?
It helps with the conflict.
Yeah, the child is better looked after in a sense.
Of course. And I think You know, I came at this because I went through a very messy divorce when my three older children were very little. Mm-hmm. And I went through a court system for 7 years, which involved several CAFCAS workers. And we were very let down.
Yeah.
And I think I came away from that experience over the organic growth of Willow. I thought, if I can support people and families and give them what was lacking, which was somebody hearing the story and allowing the story to unfold, because services literally will have one or two sessions, then a report may be written. And so for me to have 25 to 40 sessions with a family and then write a court report, I'm coming from a much deeper place of knowing.
Yeah, and that's ultimately helpful to everybody concerned.
It is. What I would say is I'm going back to study in November to do my mediation training, which is quite a meaty piece of work. It's not a piece of work I would recommend people going into if they struggle with conflict. And I think sometimes people will look at me and think, oh, she's very meek and mild and calm and gentle. But I have a voice. You know, I think, gosh, I raised four children. Three of them were boys. I can use my voice. And you've got to be quite prepared to say stop, to pause and to say no. But, you know, with time, that confidence in me grew. So I've grown from the work hugely. And, oh, my goodness, the children I meet. These kids are just incredible. You know, I'm very lucky to work with such a diverse range of people. And young people and children, my God, do they teach us. They teach us. And when you look at a divorcing family and you speak with the child, and when they're truly authentic, it's like, wow, if we just all listened to you, we'd be in a much better space.
So can you think of any sort of broader lessons that you've learned? Obviously, we don't want to go into client confidentiality, but sort of lessons that you've learned from working with children like this. What would you say the main lessons were?
Gosh, the main lessons are if we can only just listen to our children. They have the lessons and the teachings all wrapped up in one bundle. You know, I mean, I look back on how I raised my children and I think I was so busy doing that there wasn't enough being. And it's in the being and the sitting with that the learning comes. I wouldn't ever say if I could go back and do it again, because my God, my kids are incredible. But I certainly know I apply a lot of the learning from the children with how I sit with my grandchildren.
Really? Yeah.
In particular, my grandson, because I'm in a different space and I have all of that knowledge of sitting with these children who have taught me, you know, just being able to sit and define emotions with colours or touch, or, you know, making for a child who is maybe navigating something that's completely out of their control. They may have a family setting that the rug's been pulled out from underneath them and they don't know where they're going to live. They don't know who they're going to live with. They may have siblings and there may be a separation in there as well. And they come into the room and particularly, for example, the story cards, they can step into a fantasy world and they can make these incredible stories up which have a thread of, this is something I'm in control of.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And that for them gives them respite. And, you know, it might be that, you know, there might be a unicorn in the story that flies off to a magical land. And what would that look like? And can you describe it to me? And through the description of it, we can then say, I'm wondering if that could be your safe place. So when things get a bit loud or messy at home, you can go to that place in your mind and you can find that unicorn and you can sit with it and you can sit with the feelings that come up, which are, you know, the calming, the grounding, the peaceful. We'll do some techniques around grounding. And they come back and they go, oh, it really worked.
Oh, bless them.
You know, and it's, but it's just such incredible work because we learn from them.
Yeah.
But I think it's never be afraid with children to get on your hands and knees You know, I think the best thing I love, and I know it's my own inner child comes up, I'll open the door to a child and they'll come in, and the parent will sort of head off, and this child will take their shoes off, they'll sort of, I'll take my shoes off, and then we'll be on the floor and they'll go, oh, can we get the crystals out? Oh. And in the process of playing, they might come up with, well, actually, Granny's this crystal because my Granny's really important to me. And when I go to Granny's house, I feel this way. And so then it might be, okay, well, where would you like to place that crystal? I want to put it here, right at the top. And then you're suddenly developing a piece of family work.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'll name different people as different items. And you've got your family constellation laid out in front of you. And then you can say, I wonder what it would be like if we move this one, or where would you like this one to be? And particularly if children are going to start living in two homes, you can then look at, well, how can we separate this out? And what have you got in this house and what have you got in this house? So it can be, I think I would say, anybody working with children, get in there and get dirty. You know, get on the floor, get on your hands and knees, and never be afraid to allow your own inner child to come to the surface, which is why we have to have worked on that before we step in.
Yeah. So would you say that was your favourite type of work, or is that like asking people to choose between different children?
No, I think, do you know, I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because I love working with children, and I love that my own inner child is now going, woohoo, I can play.
Yeah.
But I think probably my favourite work is, and it's not gender specific either, because I do work with men as well as women. It's when somebody comes into the room and they're so open. I remember it being described once as like being a ripe pear. They're so ready to do the work. And through the conversation that flows, the growth comes, and you just see this opening of this person, and it's like, oh, there you are. Wow. And I think there is nothing more rewarding and beautiful than being on that journey with a person who moves towards authenticity. And then they come back and say, my relationship here has grown and it's changed, and we're now talking about these things, and wow, I'm parenting differently and I'm seeing things differently. And it's like, wow, how incredible is that? And I think that piece right there is the bit where I'm like, oh, I love that. I love it. But you know, if we did the work with the children, they wouldn't need so much of it further down the line.
Yeah. So it is, in some ways, you know, working with children, you're stopping, hopefully preventing maybe some of the damage that could be done. And
I think maybe rather than the word damage, it's about, we are empowering them so that they have the tools to navigate their way through the damage. Because I actually think, you know, life can be damaging. We can't stop that. But crikey, if we had a backpack full of all those tools. That we could say, hey, you know, I can cut through this hedge because I've got the hedge trimmers instead of like nail scissors. You know, it's like, yeah, I've got this, I can do this. So it's just kind of really honing in on the toolkit when they're children and when they're adults.
Having that place they can go with their unicorn.
I know.
Do you think there's a particular way? This is a bit of a difficult question, really, but to get the clients in who are like those ripe pears, how do you think you can go about attracting people like that?
Well, I think we are, we're in a privileged position because Willow is on a high street. And I think it's quite embedded in the community. So a lot of it is word of mouth. But if I kind of rewind, so if someone were coming into practice, and I work with students, and quite often they'll say, how do I get my practice going? You know, how do I get my foot in the door? And you know, lots of people will say, I need to get my website up before I do this, or I need to get this before, just do it. You know, it really is a case of literally just put your foot through the door and get in there. And the rest does follow, but things like, obviously I don't live in Tring anymore, but when I did, I had a GP, and I would tell my GP, mm-hmm. this is what I do.
Yeah.
And they'd say, oh, okay. And I'd be quite vocal about talking about what I did, mm-hmm. you know, with my local GP, or if I was going for physiotherapy, or if I was going for a massage, I'd say, oh yeah, you know, this is what I do. And it just takes maybe five people, you've said something to them, one of them will say, oh, do you know what, I've got a client I'm going to send your way.
Yeah.
And then that one client really enjoys that work and tells a friend who tells mm-hmm. a friend, and before mm-hmm. you know it, you've got this lovely spider web effect.
Yeah.
And it grows. I mean, it's worth saying that I used to work from, I had a private practice in Amersham mm-hmm. when I lived there. Then I moved to Tring and had mm-hmm. to restart again. And I worked from the basement at home. And Willow, the room I have now, I literally, it was my optician's downstairs. Mm-hmm. And I went in one day and said, oh, I don't suppose you know of any rooms anywhere to rent. And they said, oh, we've got a room upstairs that's yeah. due to come up for rent. And she said, do you want to look at it now? And oh, I was wow. like, okay. And it had bright orange carpet. The ceiling was all cracked and hideous wallpaper. and it had lots of optician's equipment.
Yeah.
And I just stood in the middle of it and I thought, I think I kind of had that lovely image of I can do something with this. And I wow. went back and said, would I have free rein?
Yeah.
And they said, yeah, if you pay your rent, you can have free rein. And I think at that point, I was possibly maybe a student or just stepping into practice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had, I think, two paying clients. And at that point, the rent was, I don't know, something like £400-£500 a month. And I thought, oh my God, how am I going to afford to pay it? I just thought, even if all I do is pay the rent, I'll take it. Mm-hmm. And it was a real kind of, should I, shouldn't I? And I took it not being able to afford to pay the rent. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, I really did have free rein. I took the ceiling down and we put beams in the ceiling.
Yeah.
And ripped out the carpet, ripped out the sink, gutted it, and turned it effectively into what was my basement at home.
Yeah.
So I recreated the space, and then the piece of wall fell down in the waiting room and I had yeah. to replace that. But through the process of that, it was taking a risk, and then the client work did come. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes in our line of work, it's sticking your neck out, taking a risk. And I was, you know, my children were all at different schools. So I made sure the schools knew this is what I'm doing.
Oh, right. It's another way of just getting your name out there.
I think it would be GPs, therapy services, schools, things like your physiotherapists, just kind of getting your face out there, really. Mm. But voicing it, because your website will do the work in the background, but there's nothing like being able to say, oh yeah, this is what I do. Yeah. And it is word of mouth now.
Yeah.
You know, we are lucky, and without sounding awful, there's always going to be ruptures in families, so that work is a steady flow that comes through as well.
Yeah. Once you get your name known and people will refer on to you, then
and find your niche.
Yes.
You know, that's something I know you've spoken about in the past, and it's really important to find your niche, because I would say that Willow's niche is the room is very different in that it's a very holistic setting. And when I first took the room, I was massaging at the same time. So it constantly smelt of these incredible oils and, you know, it was a beautiful space to be in. So your space, but also the niche was now is the family, the family work that we do.
Yeah. So it's sort of children and families, isn't it? And parenting and couples as well.
It is. And I think I would say this as well. If you are a counsellor and you really want to make a business of it, but we know we have a limited time frame before burnout hits, it's thinking outside the box. So people like Sam have got their, you know, their fantastic courses that are peddling away in the background. Mm-hmm. So things like writing, teaching.
Yeah.
But a really good way is if you have a space that is yours and you know, I've invested a lot into the room, having other counsellors in there gives you the passive income.
Yeah, because they're renting the room as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, for us, they come on board as Willow team members.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so select now about who I have on board. And I will give them the referrals. So they effectively pay a fee and they will then have the room, the resources, the clients, and the backup. We have team meetings, mm-hmm. and I will be the line manager and support them through anything from mm-hmm. letter writing to, you know, this has happened and I'm not quite sure, or even, you know, giant bird pooed on the window last week, you know, that was an issue. You know, it's having other people to say, oh yeah, you know, we can come together and support each other. That's big as well.
So is there anything you would say to a therapist starting out who's afraid to be visible?
Oh, I think you've got to take a great big deep breath and step in. I really do. Don't be afraid to be seen. Don't be afraid to use your voice. And, you know, just don't be afraid to get down there on the floor, even with your adult client. You know, a lot of the adult clients don't know how to play.
Yeah.
You know, that's something as well. But I think, gosh, just maybe if you have like a Facebook post, even just putting a picture of yourself up and saying, just saying, this is me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be a bit nerve-wracking at times putting yourself out there because we're fearful of judgment. But I think if you can be brave enough to say, hi, this is me, and I'm here, and I'd really like to help and support, people can connect to that more than a piece of writing that says, I have availability.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like you said, just coming back to what you said earlier about connecting with people and seeing your page as a chance to connect, which is wonderful.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you so much, Becky, for being on the
you're
podcast.
Welcome.
And it's been really interesting to hear all about your work and how you work with people. And good luck as you slow down, but continue to do that wonderful work with people.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. Do come and join my Facebook community, Good Enough Counsellors. And for more information about how I can help you develop your private practice, please visit my website, josephinehughes.com. If you found this episode helpful, I'd love it if you could share it with a fellow therapist or leave a review on your podcast app. And in closing, I'd love to remind you that every single step you make gets you closer to your dream. I really believe you can do it.